The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 1 Podcast.
And we welcome you back another day here. We've made it to the middle of the week, and maybe we'll have some good news today. Let's hope. Let's get to some of the headlines before we introduce the callers and the guests. And the headlines and the questions continue. How can college football save itself? It's a billion-dollar question. Can it be done without a bubble? Well, maybe a little bit late to ask that question, as we're a week away from the beginning of the official beginning of camp, even though players are already on campus. We'll dig deep into that and maybe figure out what went wrong, or can it still be corrected? All of that coming up on the program. Meanwhile, former NFL All-Pro Chris Hinton, he has two sons, one at Stanford, one at Michigan. He was recently on The Sporting Life with Jeremy Schapp and had this to say.
One of the reasons behind the organization is because when decisions are being made, I don't think there's anybody who's sitting at the table who has the health and welfare of the student athlete in the number one slot on their list of things to address. There's a lot of money involved here. Let's not kid ourselves. And those people who are in those decision-making positions, I understand. I mean, I understand their position, but understand our position as parents. We do parent 24/7, and we don't stop parenting, and we want our kids to be safe.
We have heard over and over again from administrators that we need more time. Mark Emmert said it yesterday. Commissioners have said maybe we can learn from the NFL or MLB. Meanwhile, having said all that, the NCAA, the governing body of the rules, even of college football, have extended week zero to anyone who would like to participate. Does this make any sense? Well, maybe. Oklahoma will have an off week before Tennessee. Everybody can start on August 29th. That will give teams 1 week less to prepare. Go figure it out. But it is college football where they make it up as they go along. There's some other news from the world of college football, and if you're hoping, as some were a year ago, that Lincoln Riley might go to the Dallas Cowboys, well, that train passed. He's not going anywhere. One of the fastest rising young coaches in America. He's been to the college football playoff pretty much every year. Hasn't come within about two or three or four or five or six or seven touchdowns of making a game of any of these, but he's still gotten there. He's had two Heismans and a finalist, and now a new six-year contract. And speaking of protocol, we're hearing so much about will the universities do the right thing? Well, an Arizona offensive lineman has violated the COVID protocol and has been suspended. Kevin Sumlin and his Arizona team in a critical year off to a rocky start. Well, that's where we are here on a Wednesday. Let's share with you the guest list, and then we'll give the phone number out, and we will be off and running. Dr. Michael Sagg, as we have talked many times, one of the leading epidemiologists in the country, he'll join us talking about the Marlins and what it means to college football. Joe Goodman, the award-winning columnist from AL.com. How about a player? We had a coach last night. Now we got a player, Terry Wilson, on the comeback trail. We've talked to Terry in the past. Always enjoy the conversation. And Pat Dooley from Gainesville. We'll get his take on living in a hot spot. It wasn't all that long ago when Pat told us that where he lived wasn't too bad. Florida has become a melting pot. Let's get to the calls at 855-242-7285. Love to have you join our little party here. And let's start with Greg, who is in Alabama. Greg, great to have you back.
Hey, Paul, thank you for taking my call. And we are going to be wearing masks at least until August 31st. And the governor had a presser today. And the only real difference is that school children from second grade up through college will wear them where feasible. So, you know, people will have to deal with that a little bit longer. And, you know, I was listening yesterday and everything was, you had a wonderful guy call in who runs a promotion company for concerts. And he gave out some really good information. And you asked him a question about royalties. And prior to downloads, the download era, a artist, he earned up to about 36% of every dollar from writing songs, and now it's between 6% and 12%. So it's been affected a lot since the days of Napster, and that's why most artists now, especially older artists who are in that critical age category when it comes to COVID, have been touring over the last years because there's a big market for reunion rock and roll, as they call it. And I thought he was a really good guest, or not a guest, but just got called in. And
yeah, no, he was absolutely fantastic. And you know, what he showed is what so many of us already know, that businesses may be open and you may be able to get on a plane and stay in a hotel, but there are many industries that are completely shut down right now and have no hopes of getting back.
Right. And so the majority of schools in Alabama are going to be open on time, and we're I'm a teacher and I'm ready to go back to work, and so we're dealing with all that. But then you had a caller right after, and when I was listening to his rant about the end of days, my first thought was, Paul, is this Harvey Updike again? Because, you know, when I saw you in Tuscaloosa in November, he called your show again and used a different moniker. But I was like, wow, if you listen to this guy, then what's the point of having any of this conversation if it's all going to end in November? So,
yeah, I mean, he closed his call, Greg, by saying you better get in your boat now and start going. But and by the way, I mean, everyone deals with religion differently, and I've never minded having conversations about it. I think it's an incredibly important thing, maybe the most important thing in most of our lives, to have faith. But I think we understand Ricky's message.
Yes, and you know, it will never be said that you didn't give him enough time to explain himself, and he explained himself fully.
No, right? I think everybody gets it by now, Greg, and of course, and Jim from Tuscaloosa cleared it up because he had already brought this subject up some time ago. So we're all good, oh, yeah. And that's really all that matters. David is in California. David, you are next up.
Yeah, how are you, Paul?
Hey there.
You know, if I understand right, if we had all settled down at once, you know, like in February or early March when this epidemic was known.
Well, hold on. This thing we didn't realize it was serious until mid-March, so.
Well, it's not true. I'm calling you from San Francisco. We had a convention that was here in late January, and on February 4th, actually, we discovered that one of the participants...
No. David, I know all that. I'm talking about the you know, we still had leaders of this of the CDC and of the government, and even Fauci the first week of March saying we have it contained. So I'm well aware. I was in New York in early March myself, but we this you cannot shut a country down before people even know what the problem is.
Well, what I'm saying is that if this would not have spread, it's actually a delicate virus. If it's not in your lungs, it's got like a fatty coating on it. And if that fatty coating is just left alone.
Okay. Hey, by the way,
days,
I don't mean to interrupt, David. I don't think we need a course on viruses. What's your point with all this? If we had done what, when?
If everybody had settled down at the same time, all settled down, everybody, all around the nation, all around the world, this would have fallen apart in a matter of weeks, because this virus is very delicate.
Okay.
It falls apart on its own within a matter of days. And only if it's in your lungs does it start replicating. And the fact is that we shut down our convention center on February 5th, and we're not expecting to open up until November because the fools won't settle down. And we are not going to open up our convention
center. Now, David, who are these fools that you were talking about here?
Well, anybody that's hyping hydroxychloroquine and the profiteers, that are trying to get billions of dollars for a vaccine, when in fact this thing is delicate and it will fall apart on its own in a matter of days. And the fact of the matter is that if everybody self-quarantined back in February or March and just stayed at home, we wouldn't have to
Well, David, I know you live in San Francisco, and maybe some of the news doesn't reach out that far west, but most people did quarantine for about 2 months. It was only, and the virus had plateau and it had flattened, and it was only when people started going out and doing normal things that it came back and became
well,
a raging
like,
fire.
Like Michigan, where they went up there with guns and nooses to hang the governor to reopen, and then Texas wanted to reopen, and Florida
wanted
to reopen.
Hold on a second, pal. Everyone wanted to get back to normal. I mean, just let's quit classifying people from your own ideology.
Guns and nooses, saying they're going to lynch the governor if she doesn't reopen the state. No, this is these are profiteers.
And by the way, I don't mean to. I've never lived in California. I've spent a lot of time out there. Your state is good because of what?
We've got a huge problem down in L.A. and in Orange County and in Riverside, and it's getting worse in the red city, Kevin McCarthy's district, County, and
so essentially, if you're a Republican, you're bad, and if you, I mean, I think
anybody
we got the mess.
That listens to big money is going to die. Anybody that takes the advice of big money is going to die, because big money is going to get you killed. If you just stay at home for a few days.
Okay, listen, I just died, by the way. My funeral will be right after the break. Let's take a much needed time out. Maybe the guy talking about the end of the world had something on the guy from California. We'll take a break. More of your phone calls when we return.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back to the program. More phone calls. Hopefully, we will get back on the right track here. And Mike is in Jacksonville. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Paul, this first-time caller, I was just calling because of responding back to the guy who was just talking to. My mom's in a nursing home, 84 years old, and she was diagnosed, and she has no symptoms. She's in her, 11th day, and she has no symptoms at all. She's doing pretty good, but
that's great.
I know this is a sports show and everything, but I'm a diehard Gator, and I'm 63. I'm still working. I mean, I've not had a day off since the virus or anything. I build ships. I'm a shipyard fitter, welder. And, I mean, I don't understand. She was tested 4 times, and then the 5th test, she tested positive, but she doesn't have any of the symptoms.
Mike, let me ask you, why so many tests? Was that just the protocol where she is?
Yeah, because she's in a nursing home.
Okay.
They do that, and they tested 4, and there was 4 of them that tested positive, which I'm not allowed to see her, you know, since this thing took off. But it's just, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, if the test or accurate, you know, or, you know, but you got a response on that?
I think there's a good chance they're not in some cases. So I think what I've been told, and I know, I mean, I'm like you, I don't, this is not my specialty, but there's so many tests being done that I think the system is overloaded, and you're getting some rather scratchy results. Hey, by the way, I'm really glad to hear that you're working, because there's so many people in this country that aren't, that it's great to hear that somebody's going to work every day and living as normal a life as you can live under these circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, you know, I disagree. I mean, I'm old school, so I kind of never been unemployed or anything. I've always worked. And this mask, I mean, having to wear a mask, especially in Florida, it's in the kind of trade that I'm in, it's really hot. You know what I'm saying?
And are most of the people doing it, Mike, where you are, where you work?
Are they what now?
Are most of the people that you work with wearing masks?
Well, it's required for us to wear a mask to come into the yard, but then, I mean, shoot, when you put your welding hood on or and you're working with somebody, you're sweating. I take mine off, and they don't say anything. But it's just, you know, I guess that's part of life now.
No, listen, you're doing, that's challenging work, to say the least, under the best of circumstances. Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully your mom will continue to do well. Matt is in Long Island, and you're on the air. Hey, Matt.
How you doing, Paul? First time, a long time.
Great to hear.
It's good to talk to another Vol, you know? But right now I'm quarantining my parents in Long Island because I was exposed to corona. I feel great right now, thank God. So just sweating it out, and just also all the listeners to be careful.
How long have you been quarantined?
Just for about a day.
Okay.
For now. I was either exposed 9 days ago or 6 days ago. But, you know, it is what it is at this point. And so just tell everyone to be careful. But the real reason I'm calling is about Coach Jeremy Pruitt. I think he walks the walk. I think he talks the talk. But I'm just a little concerned this year. If they lose a game to Bama, if they lose to Georgia, if they lose to Florida, if they're going to put him on too short of a leash for 2021, what do you think, Paul?
I do not think that will happen. One thing that I think he was able to accomplish last year was to get out of trouble. And I'm not sure he was ever in trouble in real terms. But he ended the season so well that the university, the administration, and of course Philip Fulmer are behind him all the way. So I don't think this year is going to really have any effect on Jeremy Pruitt. I frankly think he's in very good shape, Matt. He's recruiting exceptionally well. This will be a different season, whether they get those. You know, they'll end. You know, there's a lot of talk about a conference schedule of 10 games. So will they get that Oklahoma game in? The expectation is – so they'll end up probably playing two more SEC teams. I've heard some speculation that Ole Miss could be one of their teams. But, none of that matters. I think Jeremy Pruitt is in good shape.
Great. Final thing I just wanted to say was for anyone down in the Knoxville, Tennessee area, give some support to Gus's Good Time Deli. They're great people and make great food, and they're, unfortunately, due to all these hardships, they're having a hard time right now. And it'd be a real shame to all the UT students like myself and anyone who also went to UT to not have Gus's, you know. Stay safe.
Matt, thank you, and hope you get through the quarantine pretty well. Yeah, he made a really good point there about our favorite establishments, and I know things are difficult for a lot of people, but it is, you know, if you can help people that are still in business trying and are severely curtailed, it's really a good idea. Great suggestion. We have a lot to do, as I mentioned on the program. We have Terry Wilson from Kentucky, a good chance to talk to a player. We had a fantastic chat last night with Eli Drinkwitz. What a sense of humor he has, and what a great start he is off to. When we come back, we're going to talk to one of the leading epidemiologists in the country about what impact the Marlins will have on other sports, and also our biweekly ask of him of the return to college football. We'll talk to Mike Sagg when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back on a Wednesday afternoon, and always delighted to welcome our next guest. He is Dr. Michael Sagg, one of the leading epidemiologists in this country, who has been quoted so often on the return to sports, and just recently in the New York Times on the issues going on with the Miami Marlins. Dr. Sagg, great to have you on, and let's start with baseball.
Sure.
It's a little different than what we're talking about in college football, but it seems like what happened there has alarmed a lot of people. Just based on what you know, how did it get so bad?
Well, I think there's a couple things, Paul. First off, the team is in Miami, and Miami is a hot spot right now. So almost certainly one of the players became infected in the community, because baseball was doing a pretty good job of keeping things under control. But once it makes that entry into the team, it's going to spread pretty quickly, and that's exactly what we've seen. To me, what this is kind of, as you said, a wake-up call to all of us that all the hypotheticals and the theoreticals about opening up sports, which we all desperately want to do, I think what this is telling us is that no matter how hard we try, no matter how well prepared we are, we can expect outbreaks within all sports, with maybe the exception of the NBA because of the bubble, or perhaps the NHL. But we should expect this and be prepared for the likelihood that teams are going to be working through COVID issues throughout the season if we decide to play.
And Dr. Sagg, it seems like it may not have made any difference, but it could have, that if they had jumped on it sooner and they had the opportunity, it would have stemmed some of it. And that brings us to the question that I've yet to hear anyone really answer. I mean, just in the parlance of college football, how are we going to know when the right time is, because it may already be too late?
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, unless you're going to test every day almost, which is impractical and not doable, a lot of teams that have the resources are going to be testing, from what I understand, on a Monday and a Friday for a Saturday game. But, you know, anytime during the week, students are on campus by definition. They're going to be going to classes, and all it takes is a hot spot on one of the campuses, a player gets infected, and then it can spread to the team and then possibly to the other team during the game. What I guess my message is today is that we should expect that. And then the question becomes, at what point do we get alarmed, right? If the season starts to move on, what's our panic button moment where we say, we need to shut this down? And worse, the thing I'm most concerned about right now is that if somebody, like, say, one of the coaches, we know the players in college for sure are not likely to get that sick. But the coaches are a different story. And so what happens if one of the coaches gets infected and gets sick? It could be from the team. It could be from the community. It doesn't matter. But a coach getting sick and going into the hospital, that's going to raise more attention than the Marlins did. And I think we just got to be ready and prepared to deal with that, because to me it feels like inevitable at some point.
One thing I've heard from leaders is that, you know, maybe a little more time would be good, but as you probably know, the NCAA has allowed teams to play even earlier, a month from now. So some teams are not going to wait, assuming the season continues, and most people think it's going to. Is there anything at this point that can be done to protect the environment any more than what's going on? Or is it, as you said, you just have to go through it and see how much resistance or risk people are willing to take?
Here's my most optimistic take. If we all of us right now, double down, triple down on all the things we know to stop infection, we all are wearing masks, we're all keeping distance, we're doing it religiously, we've got 4 to 6 weeks to bring
the epidemic under control. And we can do that so that, let's say, by the second week of September, our numbers could be so low, potentially, that it would be okay to move forward. But there's a lot of ifs in those statements. And if we are exactly where we are right now, 2 months from now, I'm very concerned that that all those things I said earlier are going to come true. So our best chance is for all of us to work together and to bring this infection under control throughout the country. It will be good for all of us, not just for college sports and pro sports, but it's good for the hospitals that are under siege right now. I know in Alabama and a number of other places around the country. That worries me a lot, because at some point we're not going to be able to keep pace and bad things can happen. We don't want that to happen. So that's my message today, is for all of us to really triple down on doing the things we know to do. We've gone over this on the show a lot. I don't think I need to repeat a lot of it, but everyone knows what we can do to help out.
And Dr. Seg, I agree with you. And you're a doctor, and doctors, you know, obviously use science, but they also try to embolden hope with their patients and with the community. But the reality is, every time you say that, and I'm not blaming you, please, it doesn't seem like a lot of people are listening, because I hear more and more of my own friends who are talking about going on vacation, mixing with people that are coming from different states. And I'm sure you're hearing the same thing. So I really wonder about where we are going to be in a month or 2 months from now, and I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah, and I've analyzed that a little bit, like we all have, and my view is that we just haven't pulled together as a country. Other countries have been more fortunate and have gotten this under control, so we know it can be done. And it's just a question of all of us trying to do the right thing consistently over a period of 6 to 8 weeks just to get it under control. But then we're going to have to continue. I think the thing we've learned since, I think, the first time I was on the show back in whatever it was, March or April, we didn't know how long this virus was going to be with us. There was some hope that it might get better in the summer. You remember that? And might even go away. Well, the reality is it's not going away. And I'm pretty confident that this virus is going to be with us for quite a while longer. And to give it a time frame, at least a year, that we're going to be dealing with this. So we have a choice. We can elect, like I hope we do, to control it, where we do all the things to mitigate transmission, or unfortunately, if we don't do those things, it's going to continue to control us. And that's not a very pretty picture. So let's focus on the positive and the things we can do and make this a safer world, not only for sports, but for all of us.
Dr. Michael Seg with us. And Dr. Seg, I know that you're advising a lot of people, and I don't want to bring any of those confidences into this conversation, so I'll try to keep it composite. But every time we talk to a commissioner, every time we talk to someone involved in intercollegiate athletics, they talk about they have a medical staff, they have a team of people like you, and probably including you, and that's who they are ultimately going to rely on. The commissioner of the SEC told us that 2 weeks and 2 days ago. They are now down to crunch time, as you well know. You're a huge college football fan. If these gentlemen and women are consulting with medical professionals, you and your colleagues, what do you think they're hearing back right now in relation to giving them a green light to start the season in 4 weeks?
Yeah, I think most everyone that I would know who would be speaking up would be saying almost everything that I'm saying right now. That is, we really need to get the environment safer in an ideal way. And that means the community coming together and reducing the load. If we're not successful at that, then I think the folks are saying to the commissioners and the coaches and the athletic directors, hey, expect infections on your team. Expect this is going to disrupt the season. Expect that you're going to get started perhaps, but there, I think, is likely a time that certain teams are going to have to put on a halt, like the Marlins are right now, and that's extraordinarily disruptive, not to mention potentially hazardous for people who are infected, especially if they're older.
Adding to that, Dr. Segg, you work on a college campus. Students are not far away from showing back up on campus. Whether they're literally sitting in classrooms or not, they are going to be on campus. What's the risk of that?
Well, again, I think I can speak for Alabama, and I'm very proud of this. I've been leading a back-to-school testing initiative for all the colleges, both colleges, universities throughout our entire state, 59 campuses. And through governmental funding, we're testing every student before they get back on campus with the idea to kind of start with a fresh slate. Once the students get there, everyone has to wear a mask everywhere they go. And that is to mitigate transmission and prevent transmission throughout, for example, dormitories or cafeterias or even classrooms, to keep the students safe, but also to keep the faculty and staff safe. So that's what I know Alabama is doing, and I suspect that's being replicated. Certainly the mask ordinance is probably happening everywhere. Is that going to be enough? I guess we'll find out. Without having to go back to shelter at home, that's the best we can do, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. But I think there's no question that masks work. They're 90% effective in reducing transmission, and we just got to hunker down and do those things.
We've talked, Dr. Segg, before you go, about some of the best case scenarios, that if people do this and maybe we'll get that. I'm interested because, you know, for those who have missed some of our conversations, you've dealt with this virus. You know, for everyone who wants to say it's not a serious thing, I'm sure the 2 or 3 weeks that you dealt with it will be a contradiction to that. But I am curious about this. If things don't go well and we still open up campuses and we have college football and all the things that come with that, I mean, what could possibly happen other than having some outbreaks? I mean, there has to be some serious risks here, aren't there?
Yeah, the risks not only are what we're seeing now in terms of rising caseloads in a number of hot spots in the country and rising death tolls, which is happening. And yes, most of the people who are dying are older folks, but yet they're dying earlier than they would have but for COVID. There still are young people who are getting sick, who are going in the hospital, and who are having problems with not only going on ventilators and that type of thing. There's a rare death or two. I'm not going to minimize that, but there could also be long-term disability from either their heart, their lung, other organ systems that can be damaged by this, and we don't know what the long-term consequences are. So that's one thing. And then the second thing, as I mentioned earlier, that really is quite sobering, is what happens to our healthcare infrastructure when we run out of beds. Right now I'm at UAB. A month ago we had about 50 to 60 average census of COVID patients. We're now up to about 115, 120, so it's doubled. And if that doubles again, and yet doubles again, there's no health system that can maintain that type of response. And our response, I think, is stellar, but it's going to overwhelm our healthcare systems, and that's horrible for all of us. That's catastrophic. So let's avoid that. Let's do the right things and get this thing under control, to doing what we know to do.
And a final question, Dr. Segg, and I know every time we hear from one of the big pharmaceutical companies that they're in whatever phase of trials, we all get excited that vaccine is around the corner. You're someone who has dealt with this your entire career, and I know everyone is excited about it, but can you explain what happens when a vaccine comes to market and the risks involved?
Sure. So this, what's happening in the COVID story is totally unprecedented for vaccines. I mean, the quickest you normally might get a vaccine is over a period of years. I mean, I can't even give you a number, but a long time. We've been at this for about 6 months. We started on January 12th. Fauci and his team came up with the first candidate. This week, that particular vaccine went into human trials as what's called phase three, which is where the vaccine is compared against an inactive comparator like a placebo, and you look and see how well does the vaccine protect. If we're very lucky, and underscore that word, we would know sometime, I'm guessing around December, January, that if it's going to work, that it has worked. And then it gets to your point, Paul, then we have to manufacture it in large numbers. We're not just talking about a couple of million doses. We're talking about 300 to 600 million doses just for the United States. Then we have to find a way to get that produced and out into the public and get it distributed so that people can get injections. And even then, we're still frankly learning as we go, because the trials will have tens of thousands of people in it, but there could be some rare side effects that pop up, or there could be some people who don't respond as well. So it will reduce the transmission dramatically if it's really effective. My sense is that if we're lucky, we'll get something that's effective. It'll just be partially effective. Let's say it reduces transmission by 50%. I'll take that. But we still need to continue with the masks and the other things to keep it under control. So long-winded answer. Apologies for that. But it's a complicated issue, and we're hopeful, but there's no guarantee.
Dr. Michael Sag, always enjoy the conversations. Be well. Thank you very much for making time.
Thank you for having me back, Paul.
Incredible conversation, and a realistic and sobering conversation as well. We will take a break. More of your calls, your reaction to that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back, and Kurt is up next in Louisville. Kurt, thanks. Great to have you on.
What's going on, Paul? Fifth-time caller. I got my neutral rings on. I love you, buddy.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I was calling. Thing about, you know, the Marlins baseball team, it kind of scares me because, you know, they're professional athletes. You know, they've had 4 months where they've been kind of isolated, basically. You know, they've been doing, like, their private workouts and all that stuff. But with college football players, I think to an extent, 90% of the players, they've been isolated, you know, and they've been doing like their private workouts, but, you know, they're not going to dare go out to a bar or a club, you know, or a big party. But I think once they are on campus, you know, and there's thousands of people on campus, it could be, you know, a big deal because, you know, had the Phillies had a major outbreak, they would have canceled the whole baseball season, which that could still happen. And, you know, if it's week two and the Wisconsin football team has 18 guys get positive, you know, and they're playing Northwestern, you know, and Northwestern doesn't play or they play them and they have an outbreak, it could just kind of spiral out of control.
Kurt, I agree. And, you know, the other part of that, too, is what happens when it spreads all over a campus?
Exactly. And, you know, the campus, you know, no one knows, you know, whether it's from, you know, the science building
that's the dangerous part of this. I have no problem with anything that's going on right now, other than, and I think the doctor just said it, just be prepared. And for all these commissioners that want to give us, the 550 pages of documents, are they prepared? They better be, because they know it's going to happen. It's not going to be a mystery.
Exactly. And then, sorry, one more thing. So I called you about 3 weeks ago, okay? And I talked to you about, you know, some Rupp Arena, Ole Miss. You know, I said, you know, all it's going to take is one guy, and good thing that I think Kyrie Hill on Mississippi State said, you know, I'm going to boycott the season.
Hey, Kurt, I apologize deeply. We're hitting the end of the hour here because of the long interview. So we'll talk soon. Thanks.